You are Locked On Clippers, your daily Los Angeles Clippers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a new episode of the Locked On Clippers podcast. I'm your host, Luke San. Today is Wednesday, October 18th, 2017, and the NBA is back. First two games of the NBA season last night between the Golden State Warriors and Houston Rockets, and Boston Celtics and Cleveland Cavaliers, the two maybe presumed favorites in each conference, possibly a preview of what the conference finals in each conference could end up looking like. But bad news. Gordon Hayward, you know, I'm not going to talk too much about these two games because they're, you know, it's not super relevant, and I honestly didn't see either of them because I was at school and then came home. I didn't stay up to watch the second game, but I did see about Gordon Hayward, and that's really really unfortunate. For those of you who didn't see the games or haven't seen the news, Gordon Hayward, I believe the diagnosis was like a broken leg and dislocated ankle. I would not look up the video if you're someone who's squeamish, so I'm just gonna say that. Probably don't want to look up the video, but it was really It really sucks. Basically, it sucks for a guy who's that talented, you know, at a new city, excited to get started. It sucks for anyone. It sucks for, you know, a third string guy in the D League. You know, for some these guys who work so hard towards this goal. It's like if I broke my ankle, I would still graduate from college if I broke my ankle. But like these guys, they break their ankle and they can't play anymore. And so it really sucks. And I think that one thing that's important to do is, even though a lot of Clippers fans might hate Gordon Hayward, and I know a lot of Utah fans hate Gordon Hayward because of the way he left the Jazz. Obviously, Clippers fans, you know, maybe a little salty because his Jazz beat the Clippers in the first round last year. But I think an important part of hating your opponents in sports is appreciating them. Because, and I'm all for saltiness and trash talk and hating your opponents because it's part of the fun, right? It's all part of the gamesmanship of it. But I do think we need to be able to acknowledge that, like, the great basketball games and the high level of competition wouldn't be possible without these incredibly talented, dedicated, hardworking people on the other side. And so it's really, really disappointing. Maybe disappointing isn't the right word, but it's really frustrating. It's upsetting. It sucks when a guy who you can, you know, hopefully you should appreciate so much on the other side of the court is injured and probably could miss the whole season or possibly, you know, well beyond that or the rest of his career. So, you know, I want to bring that up because that really sucks. But I think it's important that even if you don't like Gordon Hayward, make sure that you kind of train yourself, you teach yourself that when a guy gets hurt, it's not about I don't like him. It's about I appreciate him. And, you know, if Gordon Hayward, you know, if someone else that you don't like goes out and misses a shot or has a bad game or whatever, then you could, you know, you can laugh, right? Because that's part of the trash talk and whatever. But when someone gets injured, especially a serious injury like this, I think it forces you to appreciate them because now we're going to have to watch this entire NBA season without Gordon Hayward. And that's going to suck. So I just want to bring that up. Moving on, I just have a couple things I want to talk about today, and then tomorrow we'll get a little more ready for the Clippers opening game tomorrow night on TNT against Los Angeles Lakers, and then on Friday we'll come back in, recap that game, get ready for the weekend, and hopefully I will be able to start getting into my daily routine that I was in last season. I know I've been a little lax lately. I was in DC last week, which is why there weren't any shows, so I'm sorry about that, but hopefully getting back into the routine of things, episodes pretty much every day. So, you know, we'll see how that goes, but that's the plan. Tomorrow we'll preview the Lakers game. Friday we'll come back and recap it and get ready for the weekend. So what I want to talk about right now is a little bit of stuff that happened basically in the week plus that there were no episodes. The only especially relevant thing being the Clippers sort of end of roster movements. So we'll go into that. It's pretty straightforward, but I do want to explain it so that, you know, hopefully you guys have an understanding of where everyone, because everyone who the Clippers released is still potentially somehow in the picture. So let's talk about that. So they had these four guys, CJ Williams, Tyrone Wallace, Marshall Plumlee, and Ike Iriogbu, who were their sort of training camp guys. And the idea essentially was that one of these four guys was going to get a two-way contract to be the other two-way contract with Jameel Wilson. And then the other three guys would get cut. So that's what happened. The Clippers gave CJ Williams their second two-way contract, and then the way that it works is when a guy signs a training camp contract, it's basically like a full season veterans minimum contract that isn't guaranteed. So what the Clippers did is they put a clause into all of these contracts that the Clippers could convert any of them to a two-way deal. Otherwise, you would have to waive a guy and then re-sign him, and at that point, he can sign with any team that he wants. So the Clippers gave themselves a little more control by putting what's called an Exhibit 10 into all of these contracts. So they used that Exhibit 10 to convert CJ Williams to a two-way deal, and then they waived Tyrone Wallace, Marshall Plumlee, and Ike Iriogbu. This means that these three guys are now free agents. They could be claimed off of waivers or signed by any other team in the NBA. So the Clippers lose control over them, essentially. Now, what the Clippers did, because they also really liked Tyrone Wallace, but they didn't give him the two-way deal, and I'll talk about that in a minute, but because they really liked Tyrone Wallace, they didn't give him a two-way deal. What they did is they had the Agua Caliente Clippers go out and trade for Tyrone Wallace's D-League rights from the Salt Lake City Stars. Now, what this means is if Tyrone Wallace gets an opportunity to play in the NBA, or if he gets an opportunity to play in a big European league and make more money than the D-League can offer him, then the Clippers don't have any control over that. But if he chooses to play in the NBA D-League again, if that's where he ends up at any point in the next 2 years, the Clippers, the Agua Caliente Clippers, will have his returning rights. So what this likely means is that we'll see a lot of Jameel Wilson and CJ Williams on the Agua Caliente Clippers on their two-way contracts. Additionally, Tyrone Wallace, who will likely end up back in the NBA D-League this season, will be on the Agua Caliente Clippers. Now, the difference is for Williams, Wilson, and Wallace. That's a little much. That's a lot of W's. Let's see. So for CJ and Jameel, they basically can't be called up by any team other than the Clippers because they have this two-way contract with the Clippers. Tyrone is eligible to be called up to any team. So the Clippers, the Los Angeles Clippers, don't have any NBA control over him, but the Agua Caliente Clippers have full D-League control over him. I think that makes sense. I mean, I know that's what it is, but I think that I explained that sufficiently. The other two guys, Marshall Plumlee and Ike Iriogbu, do not have any NBA D-League experience. Plumlee has 1 year of NBA experience, and he played in the D-League, but only on assignment, not actually on a D-League roster. And Iriogbu is a rookie. So these two guys are going to be available for selection in the upcoming 2017 G League draft. And so if the Clippers want them, they couldn't make a trade for their returning rights because no one owns Marshall Plumlee's returning rights because he's not returning anywhere because he hasn't played in the D-League. Same for Ike Iriogbu. So instead, the Clippers will have to either draft them or make a draft day trade for them from whatever team drafts them if they choose to, you know, pursue having them on the Agua Caliente Clippers roster, which they may if they like the guy, or they may choose not to, depending on what they saw in training camp. So that's basically where that is. And then I do want to touch on, I said basically the idea that like Williams getting the two-way contract and not Wallace, because I know this is something that upset some people. A lot of people thought that, you know, Wallace as the younger guy, more athletic guy, maybe better in the preseason. I didn't see a lot of the preseason games because they were like crazy times, like the one the second game in Hawaii started at like 1 a.m. Eastern time, which was insane. And then the Sunday game against Portland wasn't on TV at all, so I couldn't watch that one. And then the two games last week, I was in D.C. for both of them, so I didn't see either. So I only saw actually the first preseason game. So I'm not really in a position to judge between CJ Williams and Tyrone Wallace. I'm not sure it's especially a huge deal, but I know that some people liked Wallace more. The Clippers gave the deal to Williams. What I will say is, as I said before, CJ Williams is now basically tied to the Clippers. Tyrone Wallace can get called up by any team he wants. And I think that especially young guys like Tyrone Wallace, who are 23 years old, who are better, you know, one of the better players in the D-League. He was drafted, you know, in the second round, but still he was drafted in the 2016 draft. Maybe it's not a bad idea for a young guy in that situation to sort of bet on himself being called up to any of the 30 NBA teams, as opposed to tying himself into the system of one NBA team. I think this maybe is something that we'll see worked out a little more in the coming years as two-way contracts become more standard and we get used to seeing them more often and, you know, kind of norms become apparent. Like, if a guy signs a two-way contract, does he likely end up making the team? Or is he just basically a depth option for if there's injuries and then doesn't end up making the team the next year? So we'll see how often these two-way contracts turn into a roster spot compared to just being a top D-League player, being able to be called up by any of the 30 teams turns into a roster spot. And then that'll sort of determine what kind of guys take these deals. I think right now it does make sense for, you know, if you're Tyrone Wallace, and I don't know if this is the case, but let's say you're a guy who, you know, you're like a D-League all-star and you're young, you know, you're 22, 23, 24, and you think, you know, you're pretty certain that you're going to get called up once or twice during the season. Why limit yourself to one team where, you know, let's say if you take that deal with the Clippers, well, okay, right now you would be the number 7 guard on the Clippers roster behind the obvious, you know, Beverly, Teodosic, Rivers, Williams, and then the two rookies, Evans and Thornwell, who the team has a significantly greater investment in than they do in you, a two-way contract player. So you're the 7th guard. So you're looking at basically a lot of stuff having to go wrong for you to get minutes. And it's not saying it won't happen, but I'm saying that if you're the best guard in the D-League and you're a free agent, you only need stuff to go wrong for one of the 30 NBA teams. If you sign a two-way contract, you need stuff to go wrong for the one team that you're associated with. So I think, and I don't know whether the Clippers offered Wallace and he didn't want it, or whether they chose Williams. I'm not sure what the behind-the-scenes process was, but I wouldn't get too upset about, I wouldn't, you know, people are like jumping to, you know, everyone's so eager to like, they're incompetent, they have no idea what they're doing, it's obvious they should have given it to Wallace. I think that's probably overstating the issue a little bit, but I wouldn't assume that Tyrone Wallace wanted a two-way deal, just given his situation. So I wouldn't jump to the conclusion that maybe the Clippers offered it to him. I don't know. I think that that's perfectly reasonable, although I'm not saying that that happened, because I am not, I don't have like any super secret information that they secretly offered it to him, but I wouldn't rule that out. The last thing I want to talk about before I go, and I want to wrap this up pretty early this episode, is, you know, some stuff coming out about Chris Paul and Doc saying this and Chris Paul saying that. And, you know, so I guess I'll just start. I'll talk about Chris Paul. So Chris Paul has this leadership style that is not everyone, you know, vibes with it super well. And this isn't uncommon. We see this with a lot of guys in sports. There's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of intensity. Michael Jordan was this way. Kobe Bryant was this way. There's no necessarily saying that this is like a flaw for Chris Paul, that like this is undeniably bad. But he has this leadership style that's very demanding and it grates on people. And some people thrive underneath this kind of pressure. Some people can deal with it. And some people really can't deal with it. And it depends on personality types. And I mean, when I played basketball, I was kind of, I don't know, I felt like I always performed better in that kind of setting where there was high pressure, high expectations, and you sort of get this culture where everyone has such a pressure on them that everyone is really kind of busting to try to, you know, like killing themselves to do the best they can all the time. And it's like that sort of intensity and buy-in and like taking something really seriously and working really hard towards it was really rewarding for me. Now, that's not the case for everyone, and I'm not going to say that like someone's preference is right or wrong. I certainly think that sometimes people, you know, sometimes there really is something to be said for just having fun and you do play better when you're having fun generally. But you're also better in the long term if you really work hard and dedicate yourself, but you need that morale lift, you know, so it's a trade-off. And it's not uncommon to see superstars like Chris Paul, these really great players, who maybe a lot more is on the line for Chris Paul in a playoff series than J.J. Redick, where, like, J.J. Redick's legacy is not going to be defined by a good or bad playoff series, but Chris Paul's is. Chris Paul's legacy is likely going to be defined by whether or not he's able to win a championship by the time he retires. J.J. Redick, you know, a lot of players of J.J. Redick's caliber never win championships, and a lot of them that do, it's because they got to play with LeBron. It's not necessarily because of anything they did, right? So there is a lot of pressure, and, you know, I think that, I like I said, I don't think it's necessarily a bad thing. So I said this on Twitter last night. I said, it's possible for your teammates to not like you and for you to still make them better when you're on the court and make your team better because you're the best player on the team. And I think that it's important to, like, really define what, like, quote unquote, not like you means, because I don't think that Chris Paul is, like, a mean person, and I don't think that people that players on the Clippers, except maybe, you know, someone, because there's always going to be people that don't get along, but I don't think it's like everyone hated him and, you know, he was a jerk and no one wanted to hang out with him. I don't think that was the case. I mean, Luke Mbamute talked about this in the ESPN article the other day, and he said, like, yeah, there was always some tension between Chris and Blake, but it's not like they fought and argued all the time. It's not like they didn't hang out off the court. It was just like there was a little bit of tension there. And that happens when someone like Chris comes in as an authority figure, as the star of the team, as the leader, and has that sort of grating, demanding, intense personality. And so what's interesting is we've heard a lot over the last few years about the Clippers saying they feel like they're not having fun anymore, like it's a burden, like there's a ton of pressure on them. And we definitely saw this be the undoing of the team at several times, especially, you know, near the end of playoff games when they were winning and they were kind of shut down and stiff, you know, become stiff and become really worried about, they would play to not lose instead of playing to win, which is like a cliche, but I do think it applies. And so Chris Paul said, yeah, you know, the reason I left the Clippers is because I wasn't really happy with the culture there. And that was interesting to me because, you know, this is something that we've heard a lot over maybe the last, the history of the Clippers, really. Players leave or players don't want to come because of the culture. But what's interesting is that culture had always been the Donald Sterling culture. And that's, you know, more than fair to not want to be involved in the Donald Sterling culture. But what's interesting is that, the Clippers culture right now isn't the Donald Sterling culture. It's like night and day. The culture right now, you know, whatever it is, and it's maybe it's young and fledgling because this new organization has only been in power for a few years, but whatever culture the Clippers have, it's a byproduct of five people. Steve Ballmer, the new owner, Doc Rivers, the coach and team president through the transition process to Steve Ballmer's ownership, and then Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, and DeAndre Jordan, the three stars, leaders, faces of the franchise for the last half decade. And for, in, you know, DeAndre and Blake's case, for longer. So I think that maybe the most, you know, that as far as culture goes, it can be interpreted a lot of different ways, but it seemed to me that Chris was talking about locker room culture, like the attitude in the locker room, and basically, you know, referencing back to like the fact that they weren't having fun anymore. And that was just interesting to me because, like, it seems, and I'm not in the locker room, so I don't know exactly who contributes to everything, but it seems to me from my perspective that the main contributing factor to we're not having fun anymore is we have a leader who's very demanding. And like I said, I don't think it's inherently wrong for the leader to be demanding, and I think that there were times when the Clippers were having fun and maybe they struggled to find that balance, and maybe that's Chris Paul's fault in its entirety or partially or not at all. But what I do think is interesting is that he would go out there and talk about that culture when it's literally the culture that he created. And it's a culture that he created in New Orleans as well. And if he, you know, I have a hard time seeing him not create that kind of culture in Houston, if only because he apparently doesn't recognize that he's the one who created it with the Clippers. Because if he had said, I was too intense and I'm going to have a different leadership style in Houston, that would be one thing. But he acted like the problem was the Clippers locker room, and he was like almost a victim of it, and he was getting away to a better place, as opposed to that he brought that culture to the Clippers, and that culture follows him. It's his personality type. It's his leadership style. So that'll be interesting to see, you know, to see. That's why you see a lot of writers, a lot of media people, and analysts making comments like, how long until Chris Paul's Houston Rockets teammates hate him too? Because it's this idea that, like, oh, everyone on the Clippers didn't like Chris Paul, but that was their fault, not his. And I, like I said, I don't buy into people not liking him. I think that he was intense, and sometimes there were conflict and there's tension. And I think that there's tension in any workplace environment. I think everyone listening to this podcast has tensions with, you know, not maybe not huge rifts in their relationship, but tensions at time with people at home, people at work, their friends, everything. So I don't think that it's uncommon. I think it can get overblown for the sake of narrative. But I just think that it really kind of made me like kind of tilt my head to the side and go, huh, when he said that he wanted to get away from the culture, because I really didn't feel like that was a culture he created. So that's something I'm watching for this season in Houston. Not necessarily to wish poorly, you know, wish that they do badly or to think poorly about him. Because like I said, you know, even personally for me, that's the kind of leadership style that I liked to be a part of when I was playing basketball. So it's not like a critique, but rather, or it's not a criticism of the style, but rather a criticism of the apparent lack of self-awareness. So I wonder if we will see that culture crop up again in Houston, and then, you know, this might not be something that we see next week, but maybe something that we see in the next 5 or 10 years, maybe especially if he goes into coaching and it's all like, man, every locker room I go to has a bad culture. I don't know why. So, you know, we'll see, but maybe at what point there's like a realization and an adjustment there. So I think that that's going to be, that's very compelling to watch over the next, you know, the coming extended period of time. Okay, that's going to do it for today's episode. Like I said, we'll be back tomorrow. I know we didn't really talk about any basketball tonight in this show. We talked just about Gordon Hayward's injury, about the end of roster movements, and then about the Chris Paul culture comments. So no real basketball in today's show. But tomorrow we'll get ready for Clippers opening night against the Lakers. And then Friday we will recap that game and get ready for the weekend. As always, if you have any comments, questions, concerns, anything, hit me up on Twitter at Lucas J. Han. Email me lhan.clipsnation@gmail.com. And make sure you're following the Clips Nation blog, www.clipsnation.com, on Twitter at ClipsNationSBN, and on Facebook, just type Clips Nation in the Facebook search bar. Lots of good stuff coming. Really excited to get this season going, and, you know, hopefully keep the podcast coming at a little more rate too, because I know I've been hearing from some of you guys the last week while I've been away for a little bit, and some of you guys are a little insatiable. So I'll try to keep the podcast coming a little more regularly. And yeah, otherwise, you know, I'm happy the NBA's back. I'm happy the basketball's back. I'm ready to get going. Thanks for listening, guys. This is Lucas Han signing off for Locked On Clippers.